The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Good morning and welcome to Wheels Up Wednesday, 12 minutes after 6. Join in at 770-5633-770-KMED. When was the last time you ever went to a Sherry's restaurant? Sherry's restaurant. What was it like? It's kind of curious. It kind of happened sort of quietly over the last few days. The Sherry's restaurant chain, which was actually formed in Hermiston, and would, of course, became famous for pretty decent food and pies, ended up shutting down. Last one ended up shutting down. They shut it down in Portland, shut down in Medford. It's all gone. And I don't know what's going to be happening with the buildings, but I mean, restaurants are always a tough business. I don't know. This is one of those things where it ended up going downhill with COVID, and then the traffic never came back. I don't know. But I was thinking about it. Last time that I had gone to Sherry's was probably 20 years ago. It's funny how habits can change or go away. And in fact, I think the last time I went to Sherry's, honestly, it was 2001. So it was more than 20 years ago. 2001, mom and I had moved. My mother and I had moved back from Fargo, and we were living in Central Point, and we didn't really have things set up for Thanksgiving dinner. And so we had Thanksgiving dinner at Sherry's. I think it was Thanksgiving of 2001. No, that was not the finest Thanksgiving dinner we ever had, truth be told. It may have been. I may have gone there a time or two after that, but yeah, just wasn't able to keep it going. Just kind of curious if you have a feeling what gone down. I don't know if it was like going down as of late, or is it just one of those things where just weren't going to be able to make it, had to throw in the towel, and even the best run restaurants have a tough time. Hey, at least you didn't hear anything about Listeria or E. coli coming out of Sherry's, right? That's what's going on with McDonald's this morning. McDonald's having a quarter pounder E. coli scare. I guess there was one person affected in Oregon, a bunch of others. One person died over in Colorado, from what I understand. And then we had all the Listeria hysteria that has been going on the last couple of weeks. You ever get the impression that the United States, supposedly first world, we're all so big on the FDA and the CDC and all the rest of it, we can't keep the food supply clean? Is it just me? I don't know. Hey, couple of things on my mind this morning. Kind of sad to see Sherry's. I'm sure the people that are working at Sherry's will have no trouble getting work elsewhere, because there's still lots of demand for waitstaff, no doubt. It's 14 minutes after 6. Open phones as always. We noodle around the headlines. And hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning, Bill. It's Vicky from the Applegate.
Vicky, how are things for you this fine morning, huh? Wheels up
good.
Wednesday.
I'm just waiting for my coffee.
I'm waiting for my coffee to kick in. Maybe yours is doing a better job.
It's going slow.
Okay.
Well, remember yesterday I had called in about the electricity, you know, the power.
Yes.
The power.
Yes.
And after, towards the end of your phone line thing, the public commissions.
Yeah, Public Utility Commission. They had reached out to that their Public Utility Commission, according to Commissioner Roberts, Jackson County Commissioner Roberts, says they really want you to get in touch with them.
Well, let me tell you a real quick story. I lived next door for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we moved into the house next to where I lived for 20 years. I had many, many problems with my phone line at my old house next door. The house we moved into was vacant for like, I think, 4 years or something. Anyways, I spent 7 months with a woman named Danielle, love Danielle, mm-hmm. from the Public Utilities Commission.
Right.
Took me 7 months of keeping records of every time my phone messed up, every time I tried to make a call and couldn't, every little thing that was wrong with my phone. They sent several people out and said, oh, no, it's inside. You're going to have to pay. Well, it ends up it was outside.
So it was the responsibility of the phone company then to take care of it. Quest is what it probably was back then, right?
Right, but mm-hmm. they wouldn't. And so Danielle fought so hard for me. And if Danielle, if you're listening, or Robert, this house is having the same issue with the phone lines. And back then, all my surrounding neighbors had the same problems with their phone lines. So I'm going to be calling the public commission because they've already sent two people out and said, no, there's nothing wrong with your phone.
Okay, so you're still having problems with the phone. I thought you were having problems with power, though.
Well, the power has been going out. Like, Wednesday it went out three times. Like, at 3 o'clock was the last time it went out in the morning. And I made a call and, you know, put in the power report or whatever.
All right. Now, do you have web access? Do you have web? Can you go on the web?
No, I don't even have cell service at my house.
Oh, okay. Well, you're allowed to get, you got to get some web service somewhere out there at some point. But Oregon.gov/PUC has all sorts of pages. There's the Consumer Information Center. Usually, I think it has a better chance of getting some action than trying to call them, especially if your call, if your phone keeps going in and out. You know, yeah. Just saying. Well, all right.
That wasn't my original pebble I lost yesterday, but it's just kind of, you know, I dealt with them for literally 7 months. The public utilities.
Well, hopefully it doesn't take 7 months to get this fixed up. But the thing is that Public Utilities Commission does want to keep track of these bad outages and the continuing outages in order to get Pacific Corp, to, you know, to fix what needs fixed. You know, there are certain things. Now, you know, when it gets windy and stormy, you can have outages anyway, but we're getting outages in perfectly fine weather.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's like, and three within like 3 or 4 hours of each other. That's ridiculous. I mean, I actually had to cancel an appointment last week? It might have been last week because I could not get up and take a shower because my power was out.
Yeah. Well, Public Utilities Commission definitely would want to hear from you. So don't just get them on the phone, though. The phone is serious, don't get me wrong, but, you know.
Well, it's our own, because we don't have internet or cell service here.
All right, now let me ask you, are you using copper wire? Is it like an old copper phone landline?
Well, the one in this house is, probably.
All right, the reason I'm bringing this up, though, is that people, and this is not a pleasant thing to say, if you are on the old, and there's a lot of folks in the rural area that are still on some old copper line phones, the FCC no longer requires public utilities to maintain the copper line networks. In fact, I think it was August of last year that this rule went into effect, and it's because the copper line is obsolete.
Right.
We were using some of that for the old KMED AM to get the audio across town. And then what was happening? The bums were always ripping out the copper line and burning it for heat. You know, it was just crazy times. But so I would just advise if there's a way for you to, if you want to get a Charter phone, get some cell or do something like that, the copper wire network is going to just continue to deteriorate. And
well, I'm going to try and get them to come out because my phone next door was perfect after they changed the line, the one that went from the box.
But I'm just saying that the overall network, the day of the copper landline phone, is dying. And, and if the fact that CenturyLink may be maintaining it right now, I don't know for how many months or years they're going to continue doing that, and I think there is going to be a transition away. I'm just giving you a warning on this because they're not required. They're not required. The fact that CenturyLink is doing it might be because they have nothing to replace it yet, but just figure it's going to be happening, okay?
Yeah. Well, all right. I'll be talking to Danielle. Hopefully she still works.
All right. Maybe she could help you out, all right? Thank you, Vicki. So there we go. Yeah, but that's what the Public Utilities Commission is for, try to do a little refereeing when you're feeling like you're getting screwed over just a little bit on that. And like I said, Commissioner Roberts wrote me yesterday when she heard Vicki's problem and the other people with the power outages that PUC wants to hear. PUC needs to keep track of this. Pacific Power does a good job 99% of the time, but that 1% that they're having problems with is a real issue, and it's mostly in a few concentrated areas out in the rural lands, okay? 21 after 6. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED 99.3 KBXG. What's on your mind today? You can join in.
Joel here from Butherford and Truck Center, and I...
Hi, I'm Randy with Diner 62, and I'm on KMED
624. Wheels Up Wednesday on the Bill Myers Show, 770-5633 to join in. The story getting out that there's some spiking going on some of our forest roads here in Southern Oregon. Have you heard about that? Yeah. KOBI, Coin TV, all reporting on this. And Forest Service roads in the Taylor Creek and Shan Creek area. Targeting of recent cases of spiking. According to, and by the way, they look pretty nasty too. Like big boards with big nails sticking out the other side. And according to the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest, hunters and miners are reporting spikes and wires along the roads and trails in those areas. Spiking involves large nails piercing through wooden boards in the forest. Folks say that people have reported the boards have been covered with leaves, making them difficult to see. No information, other additional information available, but under investigation, I guess you get in touch with the Grants Pass Interagency Office or Wild Rangers or Wild Rivers Ranger District. If you know some more information, is this an environmental attack? Is that what this is normally about, or is this an anti-hunting? Is it anti-hunting? What normally drives this? Anybody had any experience with the spiking? I've never seen anything like that, going on myself. But this is a new wrinkle of forest road activity. What do you think about that? Someone trying to protect Bambi? It could be hunting season, right? Rifle season going on, all right? Speaking of the environment and our lovely waters, Oregon State Marine Board is going to vote today on the wording of a proposed rule for boat operations in Jackson County. This is the Upper Rogue. This, of course, what we're going to do about the jet boats. And there's been a lot of public input, a lot of public commentary, a lot of a lot of public agenda pushing there, too. And we got the Oregon Kitchen Table Organization. We're going to go split up in our little, Delphi meeting things. Gosh, I hate those things. I just wish we could find a place to dump all of the policy consensus people into a big hole and then cover them up and then put spikes on top of that. No, I don't want to do any violence to these people. It's just that whole concept. But anyway, the rule as reported here, KLBI reporting this, the rule as proposed would only allow commercial tour boats to operate between 10 to 5 and no more than 300 trips per year upstream of Table Rock Road Bridge. But also not allow commercial tour boats to operate upstream of Rattlesnake Rapids. Discussion about the boats in the Upper Rogue gone on for quite some time. Jackson County Commissioners discussing the topic last month, pushing for a decision to be made by the state. Commissioner Dyer saying they all need to be able to use the river. And see, this is it. The river is there for all. The river's there for all. It's not just for the fly fishermen. It's not just for the kayakers. It's for all. Rick Dyer properly saying, and I know that Dotterer and Commissioner Roberts are all on the same page on this particular one. They said they all need to be able to use the river and use it in a way that is least impactful to the others. And I hope that's where they come to this, because it's really up to the Marine Board to defend the waters, defend the open access to our waters that we have here in Oregon, and not fall sway to the undue influence of the screeching, close the rivers down to everyone except what I like, harpies. Okay? All right. 770-5633. Let me go to line 3. Hi, good morning on the Bill Myers Show. Who's this?
Oh, yeah. Morning, Bill. Have you heard about that problem where whales were being cut in half by speeding shipment boats, cargo carriers?
No, I can't say I heard about that one, David. No, I haven't.
What is it, up 25%? I mean, when you're talking about remaining whales and 25% of them in a year are cut in half, you're talking about protecting the rivers of Oregon, protecting them. How many speedboats a day are you talking about? 163 a day or something?
No, it was 300 per year, David. It was a very small amount.
So
it was less than one. It was less than one trip a day, and I assure you, there are no whales being cut in half on the Rogue River, in the Upper Rogue.
Well, when you start talking about the use of America's waters, and then we've got a drought year, or we've had past drought years that have caused enormous wildfires, something stupid is going on, and we need somebody to admit that climate change is real, and you got to protect the remaining water.
No one's talking about not protecting the water, David. As a matter of fact, the environmentalists want to take out the dams, which helps the river be protected because they're able to keep the water running through it all year and keeping it running cool. So it's fine. Well, it really is.
Remember the Jack Nicholson movie, Chinatown? It was about the water theft of the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically in that, it's the L.A. Portion of it. And the idea that people have been stealing water and creating problems where it becomes dried out.
Yeah, well, I don't, no one's talking about doing that with the Rogue River right now. This is talking about being able to use it, to have open access to everyone. That's what this is about. It's not about taking a water ride or doing anything like that. It's not that sort of a controversy up here. It really isn't.
I'm calling you from San Francisco, and we get loved to death all the time. And the idea that you get a flood of people coming into what remains and is love to death. I mean, there's nobody can sit on their front porch anymore.
Okay, but so if you're sitting on your front, now if you're talking about people who sit on the river on the front porch, they don't own the river. They own their property. They don't own the river, you know?
We the people own it.
Well, that's just it, which means that we the people should be able to use it.
To what industry gets to chop it up? And this gets back to whales getting cut in half by too much garbage is being shipped back and forth across the ocean.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. What you need to do, David, is that I think you need to get into your climate-friendly, equitable community in the Bay Area and not buy anything of foreign oil.
By the river, did you get an atmospheric river just the other day?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
You think this is funny? The ocean is getting so stagnant. We've created so much death in the ocean that it's now becoming the festering pond.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just have a nice world recession, and then you won't have to worry about the trade, okay?
Hurricanes.
Yeah, all right, Dave.
Over the hot, stagnant water.
David, you know, I don't live where you live. I don't live where you live. Maybe what you're talking about, they're cutting up the whales as we speak over in the San Francisco Bay Area. And maybe that's the truth. That's not good. Okay. But a cargo ship out in the San Francisco Bay Area is not a small tour boat taking a few people up the Rogue River. It's not the same thing. It's not the moral equivalent. Appreciate the call, though. You take care. Take it easy. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Now, I suppose if we really want to save the whales, we should start eating them because then we'll farm them. I'm just kidding. Well, by the way, though, if you are going to eat a whale, the blowhole is the most tender part. I've been told this on good authority. Anyway, good morning. Hi, KMED. Who's this? Welcome.
Jerry.
Hello, Jerry. Morning.
Jerry, yep. Hey, Bill.
Yes.
I was thinking about your caller, I believe it was on Monday. I believe his name was David, and he was talking about the divine plan regarding, I think, in relationship to voting.
Yes.
Anyway, that aside, I thought about what he said. I thought about, well, hey, you know, based upon his rationality, climate change isn't an issue because there's a divine plan, and so we shouldn't do anything about it. And by the way, I'm not a greenie, but you know, if I'm worried about the water I'm drinking and whatever it may contain, I'll buy a water filter.
All right. All right. Appreciate the call there, Jerry. 6:33, Wheels Up Wednesday continues. We'll have Eric Peters on after 7 o'clock. A.J. Rice joins me. A.J. Rice wrote a book. We're going to give away some of his books there, too. It's called The White Privilege Album. This could be fun, all right? We'll kick that all around coming up.
Imagine a Jackson County where every family feels safe. No resident is homeless, and all businesses succeed. Randy,
you're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day from Yahoo, otherwise known as YouTube. YouTube, which is our first lead story here with Eric Peters, Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters is automotive journalist and genius over at epautos.com. Eric, welcome back. It's a beautiful day indeed because Bono said he'll quit. What will he do if the orange man ends up getting elected?
I was going to compliment you on the intuitiveness of your bumper, because if anybody listening is still on the fence about whether they should vote for the orange man, I can give them a really good reason to do it. Bono has promised to drive his car off a cliff if the orange man wins.
That might be worth it. It might be worth it just for that. And that
Cher
alone,
too.
All right?
Cher has promised to leave the country as well.
Oh, another one! Real American salutes! Just get rid of Bono. And yet the thing is, though, I actually like YouTube music from time to time, at least some of the classic stuff.
But well, I like entertainers, and I wish they would just stick to being entertaining as opposed to exhibiting this pathological narcissism where they want us to know how they feel politically. And then there's the absurdity, I mean, the childishness of thinking that there's somebody out there who's going to base their voting decision on what Bono tells them.
Well, you know, there is the endorsement coming from Taylor Swift, who, of course, I always go to for my political advice, too, in analysis.
Well, of course, that's on the other side of the aisle, though, and you're dealing with emotionally incontinent people, and they do tend to follow the advice of entertainers like Taylor Swift and Cher.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fortunately, we do not. Although, I must say, though, that I know you get into politics on EP Autos, too, along with transportation, and also where
politics.
Yeah, you have to, because politics has transportation on the menu, so to speak, right? And arguably, it's been a few good days here, a number of good days here for former President Trump as he wants to become the next President Trump. And a lot of unearned media, you know, where he just goes out there.
Trolling last weekend of Harris. You know, who claimed that she worked at McDonald's, but there's no record of her having ever worked at McDonald's. So Orange Man trolled her by actually going to work at McDonald's so that he could state truthfully that he's worked at McDonald's longer than Harris did.
But what's even worse, though, is how the Democrats still allow themselves, and the Democrats, meaning the regular mainstream media people, they're all going out there. Breschel is saying, he didn't work at McDonald's. This was a staged thing. Of course, everybody knew that. You know, it's like, Eric, like it's a breaking story, like we didn't know unless they told us this. It's amazing.
Well, and there's a tone deafness to it, you know, because whatever you can say about the Orange Man, and there's a lot to say about the Orange Man, he is relatable in that way. You know, we know he likes McDonald's. And more profoundly, I think the reason that the left goes berserk about this guy is because the left has become the party of the elites. And Trump has somehow managed to awaken this nationalist, populist movement that encompasses the working and the middle class. And here's the kicker, the thing that's really making the left berserk, of all races and nationalities and both sexes. And that is freaking them out.
It really has turned into, the Trump Republican Party really has turned into a pretty big tent party. And I know that Tulsi Gabbard just announced yesterday she was going to rescind her Democratic credentials, become a Republican, which I thought was interesting. But you want to talk about some strange bedfellows there in that party.
Well, I don't
really
think it is that strange. You know, RFK Jr., I think, and Tulsi too, but more to the point with RFK, he is a traditional Democrat. And the Democrat Party of today is not reflective of that. It doesn't care. It has contempt for the working class, the middle class. It is the party of the effete, raised pinky elite that live in San Francisco in enclaves, not on the street in tent cities, and in D.C. and other places like that, where they're completely disconnected from the realities of what's going on in this country. You may have caught that interview between J.D. Vance and Martha Raddatz, which was really revelatory, where she tried to correct him about the business of these violent immigrant gangs taking over the apartment complex in Aurora, Colorado.
Yes.
And he just responded with, do you hear yourself? Like, you're normalized. This is okay that there are violent street gangs taking over whole apartment complexes, even if it's only one, and you're okay with that?
Yeah, and people are figuring this out. You know, when you think about Trump back on the And well, you write about this. The orange fries with that article is great,
yep.
You know, as always. But think about this. Trump is a billionaire, has a gold toilet in his house, for crying out loud, in his apartment, right? He has a gold toilet in there. It must be gold. I don't know if it's solid gold or what the percentage of it is, but he has a gold toilet in there.
Yep.
And yet likes McDonald's. But you see, that's just it. I mean, maybe that's why they're upset with him more than anything else, is that he's a traitor to his class. Maybe that's the way they're looking at him.
Well, I think so. He's a billionaire, but he has proletarian likes, you know, working in middle class likes. He's authentically a guy who likes sports, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's interested in that. And you can just imagine how much Kamala Harris is actually interested in watching football, for instance. You know, and I'm not carrying water for that. I'm just pointing out that this is something that a lot of Americans like to do.
Yeah, and that's something that I fall down on because I'm not much of a sports guy. But be that as it,
but Trump is authentic. He's real. You know, in fact, even his vulgarity and coarseness is authentic. When he speaks extemporaneously, that's him. He's not reading off a teleprompter. And maybe you don't like the way he speaks. Maybe he's obnoxious. Absolutely, but it is him.
You know, the controversy about the late Arnold Palmer was a classic example of it. It's just a guy up there talking. It's the way guys, you know,
we
guys will sometimes talk about stuff and get kind of crude. It's just the way it is. But now I don't know if that necessarily wins him a lot of suburban cat lady votes, but.
Well, no, the cat lady votes are gone, but I think there is a trend, at least in the polls that I've read, that working and middle-class white women are beginning to kind of warm a little bit to him. Not because they approve of his conduct or his boorish comments, but because at least he's real and at least he's sort of a normal man in a lot of ways.
Yep, we can take that.
Watching this waltz guy literally waltz across the stage and then shove his special needs kid around and just serially lie about everything. You talk to women, and women tend to be particularly sensitive to that kind of lying, and I think it's not playing well.
I find it interesting. I don't know if you caught that, but on CNN, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, a fact checker just took walls apart on the Trump economy jobs claim, because they've gone out there and claimed that Trump has lost more manufacturing jobs than anyone. And that actually anyone, and they fact checked him on the show. I thought it was quite interesting. They pushed back and said, no, it's actually George W. Bush that ended up losing more during his administration at that point, like 4 million jobs or something like that. And Trump lost 178,000 or so. Everybody lost some in there because there's been a long-term trend of deindustrializing. I guess, Eric, so that we can enjoy our universal basic income and our climate-friendly, equitable community 15-minute prison city that the people like Kamala Harris envision for our future, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know, this is the guy who's actually, again, agree with him or not, you know, his economic policies, the things that he's proposed doing, are designed specifically to bring jobs back to this country. He wants to have Americans working at real jobs again, not government jobs. And I think almost everybody recognizes the lie that's been peddled by Biden and by Harris now about how many jobs were created during the last 4 years. Well, they're the jobs that got destroyed during the whole COVID thing, and they count them as actually being created jobs as opposed to people coming back to the jobs that they were forced to leave.
Yeah, we broke your leg, and then we hand you a crutch later on. Say, look how we helped you walk again. You know, that kind of thing. But this is government in general. Government is not our friend, as you write so eloquently quite often over at epautos.com. All right, so pretty good story there. Definitely momentum in Orange Man's favor. And if Orange Man can actually take, you know, gosh, even a weed whacker, maybe, you know, I'd prefer a machete to the administrative state, but even a weed whacker would be welcome about this time, wouldn't you say? I mean, he could save the automobile industry, because the automobile industry right now is in big, big trouble, is it not?
Yeah, and that's why the rank and file of the UAW supports him. The leadership, you know, is kind of holding its breath and not saying anything. But the rank and file auto workers understand what's going on. They understand that this EV push is an existential threat to the industry and so to their jobs. Everybody gets it. You can't not get it. You go to the supermarket and you're paying $8 for a dozen eggs and $5 for a pat of butter. It's absurd. Everybody knows what's going on.
Exactly. Speaking of the EVs, electrified armed government workers.
You'd love that one.
I have not had a chance to read this one yet. You put it up since I last checked in with the site late last night. What's up with that one, huh? Electrified.
It's really funny. Get ready for a Schadenfreude moment. Now, this has to do with California, but other states are involved as well. In California, as you know, The great Governor Gavin Newsom has decreed that all vehicles must be zero emissions electric cars by the date certain of 2030 or 2035. That includes municipal vehicles and including cop cars.
And that is not that long from now. 6 years, not very long at all, really.
Well, it's already happening. A couple of these departments in California have actually bought converted Teslas to use as their cop cars, and the cops are not very happy about it for all the reasons that the rest of us are not happy about.
Oh, no.
Imagine, you know, you can't even bring your prisoner to back to the jailhouse because you ran out of range, and now you have to sit at the fast charger and wait.
Oh, no. They're actually having those situations occur with these police departments that have converted? Man.
Yes. You know, so instead of being able to just go out there and do what they do, now they have to just, like everybody else who's been pushed into these things, plan everything around how little range they've got and how long it's going to take to charge these things up. Plus, there's the cost to the people of these communities. You know, in the past, they would buy something like a Ford Crown Vic. Everybody's familiar with the Crown Vic.
Yeah.
And the police version of that cost about $30,000 when it was last available.
Relatively inexpensive. It was an economical vehicle for the taxpayer that way. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Now they're spending $50,000 plus, you know, on one of these EVs. One. So, you know, the reason why your property tax is going up in these areas is so that they can buy these EVs to then issue you a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt in.
I'd be curious to know how high-speed chases will be taken in the EV cop cars in California. Is it one of those things where, all right, we got, all right, here's the person who just murdered someone, and we're going to try to chase this guy down and take him into custody. And then all of a sudden you see that you only have like 40 miles of range back, and then you stomp the accelerator, and then you're on the side of the road here?
Well, there's two things that are really interesting about this, and one of them is something that most people don't know about this. Yes, EVs are extremely quick in terms of how rapidly they accelerate from a dead stop up to 60, let's say, or through the quarter mile.
Well, yeah, because it's instant torque. Instant torque out of an electric motor is what you get.
But they're not very fast. You know, if you look into what the top speeds of these cars are, typically they're around 130, which, you know, that's fast, but it's not that fast. You know, if you've got a fast motorcycle or you've got something like a Hellcat Charger that can go close to 200 miles an hour, you're gone. They're not going to be able to keep up. And the other thing is, once you kick an EV up to, say, 100 miles an hour, you literally could watch, you could look at that range meter as if you had a fist-sized hole in the gas tank of a gas-powered car.
Okay. Electrified AGWs. Read up on epautos.com. Eric Peters with me on Wheels Up Wednesday. And what have you reviewed this week here, Eric? What's your latest?
Well, it's the Range Rover Evoque, which is interesting in that it's not that expensive relative to how much everything else costs.
Now, is it an Evoque? Is there an EV aspect to it? Is that what it means?
No, not at least yet, not in this country. They do sell a battery-powered version of it in the UK, but it's not here yet, thank God. This is essentially the smallest of the Range Rovers. There's two others, the Velar and then the Range Rover Sport. So this one is a compact-sized vehicle. But it's only about $49,000, and I put that in Airfinger's quote to reflect the fact that, you know, only $49,000. Heck, you can easily spend that much on a non-luxury something similar, like, for example, a Ford Bronco Sport, which I compared in the review with. It's roughly the same thing. It's an all-wheel drive vehicle with a 2-liter turbocharged engine, almost exactly the same size, very similar in terms of its layout and features. So why not go ahead and get the Range Rover, which is at least more stylish looking, and it has that cachet of being a Range Rover rather than a Ford. Not that there's anything wrong with the Ford.
No, not at all. But certainly Range Rover has there's a certain mystique to it. It's a nice luxury brand. The thing is, I've known people who have had Range Rovers, and they've had reliability issues here over the last few years. Has that been pretty much taken care of in this iteration?
Well, it's one of these things, again, there's a lag time. They've supposedly made things better, but you really can't objectively say until vehicles have been in circulation for at least 5 years, and ideally 10, so you can sort of establish that track record over time to see how they do. But the bottom line is everything is getting worse in that respect because of the complexity that they're engineering into these vehicles, which now have everything is electronically controlled, drive-by-wire. They have these big touch screens, no more physical controls, and these things are just inherently less reliable. It's why you get a new cell phone every 3 years.
You had mentioned to me how even Toyota was considered like the crown. This is like the king of corporate automotive reliability, and even they have found themselves with a tarnished crown as of late here. And a lot of it has to do with having to make the cars you were mentioning to the government specifications, and you're not able to really have the time to test things out. You got to get them out on the road, right? Get them out
And they're more complex. And this is a very interesting story, I think, because it's this very subtle hidden cost of compliance. Most people have no idea what's going on and why. Why did Toyota take its naturally aspirated V6 out of the Tacoma and the 4Runner?
Yeah, which was bulletproof, by the way. Completely reliable, as could be. And they ended up replacing it with a different engine. It hasn't been so successful, apparently, right?
Yeah, a turbocharged 4. And very similarly, in the Tundra, which used to come with a bulletproof V8, now comes with a twin-turbo V6, and they've had massive problems with it. They had to recall 100,000 of them to replace the engines because of some kind of manufacturing defect in the things. And it's a disaster for them. And the only reason they're doing this, there's no other reason, is because of the pressure to eke out a couple of more miles per gallon out of the engine and to reduce the emissions of that very, very dangerous, dread, inert gas, carbon dioxide.
Yeah, with President Trump, if President Trump is elected, and I certainly hope he is, he could actually slash away some of that regulation, right? You know, get control of these administrative agencies because no one, there's no law that says that tells the EPA that says that carbon dioxide has to be considered a pollutant, is there? I'm not aware of one.
No, there's not. And with that recent Chevron decision, he actually would have legal standing to do it. And I think he could make a very, very persuasive case to the American people directly by saying, look, it's time that we have a cost-benefit analysis of these regulations going forward. Mm-hmm. It is wrong to hit people with these costs for literally negligible, if any, benefit.
Even the Endangered Species Act, even when the Endangered Species Act was written, I recall that there was part of that law that said that there had to be a cost benefit to whatever was being done. It's not just do this in order to save the the lily-livered snail darter or something like that.
Exactly. I mean, think about, here's a good example. The thing that we like to talk about a lot is that automated stop-start. We know the acronym for that, which adds at least several hundred dollars to the cost of the vehicle up front. And then down the road, you have an additional secondary battery most people don't know about that's part of the system. You also have a more elaborate starting system, whether it's a belt drive, whether it's a flywheel generator, something like that, a 48-volt electrical system, more complexity, more failure points. When they break, you get to pay for it. Well, what's the upside? You might get an extra half a mile per gallon out of the thing. Does it make any kind of sense to do that?
Not really in the real world, all right? Eric Peters with me this morning. Let me grab a quick call for Eric. Hi, good morning. You're on with EP. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill. It's Tony.
Tony, fire away. What's up?
Hey. Well, hey, I heard you talking earlier about the price of groceries. Have you guys been to the hardware store lately?
Oh, hey, yeah.
I went to buy some spray paint the other day, and it was $7.50 for a can of the Ace paint. It wasn't even the Krylon or the Rust-Oleum or the good stuff. I want to say,
yeah, how about $7 for a can of WD-40?
$7 for WD-40, and that's of course the inflation going on in the chemical industry too.
Uh-huh.
Hey Tony, it's a good point to bring that up.
Hey, I also want to encourage everybody listening out there to buy an electric car.
Why is that?
Because I have a 74 Chevy truck and an 81 Chevy truck, which both have big blocks in them, and I need the gas, so I could use the gas myself. So.
In other words, more gas for Tony, right?
Yeah, it's 6 miles a gallon on this thing on a good day. So, but they're I got points distributors for both of them if I ever need to put those in there, and they're
All right. Well, if the EMP hits, we're coming over to your house. You're gonna be our transport. Okay.
You give me a call. You betcha.
All right, Tony. Thanks.
And keep up the good work, Bill. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Of course, I don't know how we can get a hold of Tony if the EMP comes because our cell system is down too. But that's a conversation for another day. All right. Eric, before we take off, I wanted to dig into something that that you brought up that I think is one of the more important stories that you have covered, and that is about the need for a dash cam and why everybody really should be looking at a dash cam. I ended up making the jump Christmas last year. Linda bought me one, and she was concerned about all the driving that I do and how much crime and how much people trying to do fake insurance claims, how much that's affecting people these days. And the only way you can really defend yourself is to have a way of proving it. So why don't you break down your story there a bit?
Yeah, well, as anybody who's been following the news knows, the cost of insurance has been exploding, even if you've never had an accident, even if you don't have a seatbelt ticket on your record. But God help you, if you are found at fault in an accident. And there are these scammers out there, people who will deliberately stage an accident, and it's not just the physical damage to the car. Sometimes they'll get out and say, "Oh, my neck! Oh, my neck!" Mm-hmm. So, you know, then you're faced with the scenario where potentially whatever your insurance covers, it ends up not being enough to cover these supposed damages that were incurred, and you end up getting the bill for all of that. And it can be absolutely a catastrophe when that happens. So having one of these cameras, big rig drivers have had them for years. Of course, cops have them too. But having a camera mounted on your dash that actually keeps track of what's going on provides irrefutable evidence. So it's not a question of he said, she said. It's, look, this is what happened. And I embedded a video in the article that shows exactly that. These people were driving along. This car cuts them off and then tries to slam on the brakes to get them to rear-end them. The car stopped in time, but then these people threw their car in reverse and hit them.
Oh, jeez.
Into their car.
So they just wanted to commit insurance fraud, essentially,
correct.
Right?
Correct. So, and the other good news is, you know, I'm, people who listen to this show will know, I'm not an early adopter of technology, especially expensive technology. But these GoPro type cameras that are really neat to have just for your own personal enjoyment that you can, you know, use to record your outdoor adventures and so on have become really inexpensive. I got myself a knockoff GoPro for about $60. So there's really no excuse not to have one anymore.
Do you use that as part of your reviews when you're on the road doing your rants now?
Yes, that, and you can put them, if you ride motorcycles, you know, they come with attachments, and, you know, you can put them on a helmet, for example, or wherever you'd like. And you can, you know, want to put videos on YouTube or Facebook, you can do that. The other thing, too, I got into this in the article that's, I think, equally important, documenting interactions with cops when you get pulled over, even just having that camera present and they see it. They know they're being watched, so, you know, you're not going to hopefully be the victim of some kind of a trumped-up, I-smelled-marijuana, hutting.
Hmm. It's interesting how you even mentioned how the government, the state, is watching us all the time and making it more and more apparent that they're watching us, and
yep.
We don't necessarily really like that. So you're saying, okay, if you're going to watch us, we're going to watch you right back. And
absolutely.
I think that's reasonable, and it keeps everybody on much better behavior, so to speak. Do you think it's necessary to have two directions? I know there are some that I only have one that looks forward right now.
Yep.
Should you spend the extra and get one that looks back too?
Yeah, well, I would, because otherwise you're blind in the opposite direction, you know, rearward. And if somebody piles into you, then, again, it just comes down to what he said and you said. So, yeah, I think it's totally worth doing that. And, again, they're much simpler now than they used to be, and they're in addition to being not particularly expensive. You know, I'm a big booster of radar detectors. Radar detectors are expensive, you know, $500 for a good one. So that's quite a bite to go for that. But $60 or $70 for one of these things, to me, it's a no-brainer.
All right. Get a Camera is the name of the article on epautos.com. The other thing I would mention is that look how much money you could make if you're the one that actually sees the UFO land, too, because you have the dash cam going, right?
Completely. Project Bluebeam is coming.
That's
down near you.
Why not? All right. Hey, Eric, always a good talk. We appreciate you coming on from epautos.com. And what do you think? What do you think you're going to review next week? Anything in the
I know. Driveway? I actually made a note to myself this week. You know, I'm trying not to have as many Biden moments as possible. And it's going to be the Kia Sorento.
Kia Sorento.
Which is very similar to the Hyundai Santa Fe, but it's not identical. So there are some significant differences between the two. And we can talk about that next week.
And very economical purchase, from what I understand, isn't it, compared
well,
to many?
Not expensive. You know, Hyundai and Kia, they offer a lot of bang for the buck. You know, vehicles have gotten so ridiculously over-the-top expensive, especially for anything that's usable as a family car. And this one's not. I think the base price of it is in the mid-high 30s. And it's a three-row vehicle. So, you know, if you've got kids, it's the kind of vehicle you might want to look into.
All right. Very good. We'll talk with you about it next Wednesday. Thanks, Eric. Be well.
You bet, Bill.
epautos.com. Please rate and support the site. Couple minutes after 7, this is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.